know about you, but and maybe you're getting tired of presidential debates. Three, that's a big number when you're packing them all into the course of several weeks, especially the weeks leading up to the presidential election in November. I don't know about you, but I thought last night's was the most interesting, probably the most substantive. And I was just as pleased as punch to hear some of the questions that were posed. We're going to be dealing with four of those questions here in the first hour of Issues, Etc. And they do overlap a little bit. During open lines, it is open lines, and I do invite your reaction to some of the interchanges that we're going to be hearing here in the first hour of the program on whether or not homosexuality is a choice. Both President Bush and Senator Kerry answered that question slightly differently. Well, very differently in that case. We also last night had an opportunity to hear Senator Kerry's reaction, really a kind of an official reaction, a lengthy reaction, to the action of some Roman Catholic bishops in the United States. And, well, as Bob Schieffer, the moderator, put it, saying that it is a sin to vote for John Kerry. I don't think any of them have ever said that, per se, but they have talked about the grave sin of voting, knowingly voting for pro-choice legislators and candidates. The other question that I found very interesting was, what part does your faith play on your policy decisions? Now, I don't know if there's ever been a presidential debate in my memory where that question was asked, and where that question had to be asked. This is somewhat unique, probably, somewhat unique that we are at a point in the public discourse in our country where that question is one of those kind of things that when Bob Schieffer is going through all the questions he could ask in the very last presidential debate, this is the one that he does not leave out. This is the one that he says, I don't know if that's really necessary. He considered it necessary. I think it was, too. And finally, we'll also find out from both of the candidates whether or not they would overturn Roe v. Wade. We're going to hear all of that here in the first hour of Issues, Etc. A lot of audio to get through, but I do invite your reaction, your questions, and your comments. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In the second hour of the program, a 25-minute conversation with David Mills, editor of Touchstone Magazine, about American politics and the separation of church and state. Certainly there is a distinction between church and state. How far does the separation go? David Mills will answer that question for us in the second hour of the program. Then, an hour-long conversation from 4:30 till 5:30 with Dr. Martin Noland here in Studio A. We're going to be talking about the 16th century Reformation and Luther's evangelical emphasis. What did it mean to be an evangelical? That word. They would have said evangelisch. What did it mean in the 16th century? Then, in the very last half hour of Issues, Etc., Suzanne Venker joins us. You may have seen Sunday's 60 Minutes feature on stay-at-home moms. You might have, might have infuriated you if you're one of those stay-at-home moms when they kept on talking about how women were forsaking their success to stay at home with their kids. We'll see what Suzanne Venker thought of it in the last 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. It's open lines 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Before we get into this audio, I do want to mention that my producer, Jeff Schwartz, is at home recovering from some minor surgery, so I think we ought to keep him in our prayers. I spoke with him just a little bit ago, and apparently Jenny, who's sitting in his chair right now, made him laugh. Is that correct? And you're not supposed to make someone laugh after they have surgery, Jenny. It's good for him. Laughter's the best medicine. That's what they always say. So we'll keep Jeff in our prayers. He had some minor surgery earlier today. All right. The first question that caught my ears and made them stand on end was, is homosexuality a choice? Here's moderator Bob Schieffer. He put this question to President Bush.
Mr. President, let's get back to economic issues, but let's shift to some other questions here. Both of you are opposed to gay marriage. But to understand how you have come to that conclusion, I want to ask you a more basic question. Do you believe homosexuality is a choice?
You know, Bob, I don't know. I just don't know. I do know that we have a choice to make in America, and that is to treat people with tolerance and respect and dignity. It's important that we do that. I also know in a free society, people, consenting adults, can live the way they want to live. And that's to be honored. But as we respect someone's rights, and as we profess tolerance, we shouldn't change or have to change our basic views on the sanctity of marriage. I believe in the sanctity of marriage. I think it's very important that we protect marriage as an institution between a man and a woman. I proposed a constitutional amendment The reason I did so was because I was worried that activist judges are actually defining the definition of marriage. And the surest way to protect marriage between a man and woman is to amend the Constitution. It has also the benefit of allowing citizens to participate in the process. After all, when you amend the Constitution, state legislatures must participate in the ratification of the Constitution. I'm deeply concerned that judges are making those decisions and not the citizenry of the United States. You know, Congress passed a law called DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. My opponent was against it. It basically protected states from the action of one state to another. It also defined marriage as between a man and a woman. But I'm concerned that that will get overturned. And if it gets overturned, then we'll end up with marriage being defined by courts. And I don't think that's in our nation's interest.
Senator Kerry?
We're all God's children, Bob. And I think if you were to talk to Dick Cheney's daughter, who is a lesbian, she would tell you that she's being who she was. She's being who she was born as. I think if you talk to anybody, it's not choice. I've met people who struggled with this for years, people who were in a marriage because they were living a sort of convention, and they struggled with it. And I've met wives who are supportive of their husbands or vice versa when they finally sort of broke out and allowed themselves to live who they were, who they felt God had made them. I think we have to respect that. The President and I share the belief that marriage is between a man and a woman. I believe that. I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. But I also believe that because we are the United States of America, we're a country with a great, unbelievable constitution with rights that we afford people, that you can't discriminate in the workplace. You can't discriminate in the rights that you afford people. You can't disallow someone the right to visit their partner in a hospital. You have to allow people to transfer property, which is why I'm for partnership rights and so forth. Now, with respect to DOMA and the marriage laws, the states have always been able to manage those laws, and they're proving today, every state, that they can manage them adequately.
All right, now I'd like your reaction to this, because they gave two different answers. You had to listen, of course, because they're going to use all the allotted time that they have. They gave two different answers when to the particular question, is homosexuality a choice? Which is a brilliant question on the part of moderator Bob Schieffer, because he says this is really the issue behind the whole gay marriage issue. Is homosexuality a choice? Someone who says, as did the president, I don't know. He is more or less free to take a position against gay marriage on a matter of principle. I don't know if it's a choice. That's probably the best he could say. What should he have said? Did that disappoint you at all? Did you want him to say, no, it isn't a choice. It is a choice. It's a behavior choice. John Kerry said very clearly, it is not a choice. Both of them support marriage between a man and a woman. The difference seems to be they differ over whether or not they support the constitutional amendment. Kerry says the states are handling the issue just fine. Well, I would point out just one thing, and that is in the state of Louisiana, where a constitutional amendment was overwhelmingly passed, a judge last week, rendered the vote of the Louisiana electorate null and void. So some of the states are handling it well, like Missouri. Others are having a little bit of difficulty. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So George W. Bush says, I don't know if homosexuality is a choice. Kerry says, it's not a choice. Let's see what you think. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. As I said, we got a lot of audio, but we do have time for a phone call or two. Mike is on the line. Mike, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, I was just wondering what your opinion of Kerry using Dick Cheney's daughter as an example when that question came up. It was talked on other talk shows where he didn't have the right to use it, and Dick Cheney's wife came out against him using Dick Cheney's daughter as an example.
It's a good question, Mike. Thank you very much. Yeah, I heard some audio earlier from the vice president himself, and I did hear that the vice president's wife was a little upset right after the debate, that their daughter had been used as an example by John Kerry. To be quite honest with you, when I was listening to it last night, it just didn't even faze me. Because everyone knows that the Cheney's daughter, one of the Cheney's daughters, is a lesbian. There's no secret about this. It was all actually discussed very openly in the vice presidential debate last week. And it didn't strike me as anything unusual. Well, now the Cheneys have a right, as mother and father, to be upset about this if that's how they react to it. But initially, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And in that case, I said, just leave it to the Cheneys to deal with this as the parents of this young woman. And, hey, if they say it was inappropriate, they're the parents. And they're the ones whose opinion really matters. The rest of us are just opining on that. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Bush said, I don't know if homosexuality is a choice. Should he have said, yes, I do know that it's not a choice? What would have been the right answer? I'm thinking in terms of what God's word has to say. What would have been the right answer? He made the most politically expedient answer. And perhaps he doesn't really know. I think the right answer would have been, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant whether or not homosexuality is a choice. The question is it right or is it wrong? And is there any precedent whatsoever for the state sanctioning same-sex marriages, either in law, natural law, or our basic moral sense? Now, he couldn't have said that without catching a lot of fire, which is why he probably said and will maintain, I don't know. The next question that made my ears perk up, Kerry was asked about his reaction to a New York Times story involving Roman Catholic bishops. Of course, Senator Kerry is Roman Catholic. Here's Bob Schieffer's question.
Senator Kerry, a new question for you. The New York Times reports that some Catholic archbishops are telling their church members that it would be a sin to vote for a candidate like you because you support a woman's right to choose an abortion and unlimited stem cell research. What is your reaction to that?
I respect their views. I completely respect their views. I am a Catholic, and I grew up learning how to respect those views, but I disagree with them, as do many. I believe that I can't legislate or transfer to another American citizen my article of faith. What is an article of faith for me is not something that I can legislate on somebody who doesn't share that article of faith. I believe that choice is a woman's choice, between a woman, God, and her doctor. And that's why I support that. Now, I will not allow somebody to come in and change Roe v. Wade. The president has never said whether or not he would do that. But we know from the people he's trying to point the court he wants to. I will not. I will defend the right of Roe v. Wade. Now, with respect to religion, you know, as I said, I grew up a Catholic. I was an altar boy. I know that throughout my life this has made a difference to me. And as President Kennedy said when he ran for president, he said, I'm not running to be a Catholic president. I'm running to be a president who happens to be Catholic. Now, my faith affects everything that I do and choose. There's a great passage of the Bible that says, what does it mean, my brother, to say you have faith if there are no deeds? Faith without works is dead. And I think that everything you do in public life has to be guided by your faith, affected by your faith, but without transferring it in any official way to other people. For that's why I fight against poverty. That's why I fight to clean up the environment, protect this earth. That's why I fight for equality and justice. All of those things come out of that fundamental teaching and belief of faith. But I know this, that President Kennedy in his inaugural address told all of us that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. And that's what we have to say. I think that's the test of public service.
Mr. President?
I think it's important to promote a culture of life. I think a hospitable society is a society where every being counts and every person matters. I believe the ideal world is one in which every child is protected in law and welcome to life. I understand there's great differences on this issue of abortion, but I believe reasonable people can come together and put good law in place that will help reduce the number of abortions. Take, for example, the ban on partial birth abortion. It's a brutal practice. People from both political parties came together in the halls of Congress and voted overwhelmingly to ban that practice. It made a lot of sense. My opponent, in that he's out of the mainstream, voted against that law. What I'm saying is that as we promote life and promote a culture of life, surely there are ways we can work together to reduce the number of abortions, continue to promote adoption laws. That's a great alternative to abortion. Continue to fund and promote maternity group homes. I will continue to promote abstinence programs. The last debate, my opponent said his wife was involved with those programs. That's great, and I appreciate that very much. All of us ought to be involved with programs that provide a viable alternative to abortion.
Now, President Bush's answer there wasn't so much an answer, because the question, of course, was, what's your reaction to the Roman Catholic bishops, some of them, as Schieffer said, saying it was a sin to vote for John Kerry? I don't think any of them ever said it was a sin to vote for John Kerry. They talked about being complicitous in grave sin, or being complicitous in intrinsic evil by knowingly voting for pro-choice lawmakers. But the question was about whether or not, the reaction to that story about the Roman Catholic bishops. Kerry somewhat reacted. President Bush very deftly sidestepped that one. He didn't say anything about the Roman Catholic bishops or their decision or how people vote. He just said, I want to promote a culture of life. I've done this and that in order to do that. And I think that we can all work together, no matter how we differ on this issue, to reduce the number of abortions. Very interesting, and we'll be talking about this in about 40 minutes here on Issues Etc. at the beginning of the second hour. Senator Kerry's response there, he said, as he said many times, I can't legislate an article of faith. He said he has certain beliefs as a Roman Catholic, and yet he can't legislate what is an article of faith for him. He didn't exactly say what that article of faith was, and he came back to his favorite Bible passage, faith without works is dead, and he consistently has been applying this over the last couple of weeks in religious venues to the fact that he's got faith and works, and the Bush administration just talks faith but doesn't walk the talk. He's basically, that's how he's using that passage. What did you think of the answers? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Again, here is an example, probably, of one of the biggest, if not the biggest, difference in my mind between these two candidates, and that's the issue of life. One is very clearly pro-choice. We'll hear a little bit more about that when we get to, probably up 15 minutes here, when we get to the last cut we're going to be listening to from the presidential debate on whether or not they would be overturning Roe v. Wade and how they would exercise their judicial appointments. I'm anxious to hear from you on this. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. David Mills will join us to have that conversation in about 40 minutes on this whole notion that there are certain things that are articles of faith, that are tenets of religion, that we can't bring into the legislative process. And he answers the question, how should lawmakers, what should inform our policy decisions? Whether you're religious or not religious, what should inform policy decisions if a lawmaker is a religious person? To what degree should the tenets of his religion inform his policy decisions? One of the things David Mills says is legislatures are legislating morality all the time, every time they vote. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll take a few phone calls here before we go to this break, because there's not enough time to get the entire, it's a rather lengthy, about a 4-minute bit from the presidential debate here before the break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So far, the two issues that I thought had to be discussed in this last debate in a full way have already been discussed in these first two audio bites that we've heard. The question of homosexuality and gay marriage, that had to be discussed. And number two, and we got a clear answer from both of the candidates on their position on both homosexuality as a choice and gay marriage as a matter of law, and the issue of, well, starting into the issue of abortion. Both of these things simply had to be discussed. I would have been quite disappointed had they not. I got icing on the cake, though. The icing on the cake was that the question that I would have asked, did you listen to Open Lines yesterday about whether or not President George W. Bush is a political and social conservative but a theological liberal? The question that I would have asked actually got asked. We'll hear it on the other side of the break. The question, what part does your faith play in your policy decisions? A very important question. And then we'll also hear about whether or not either of these men are interested in touching Roe v. Wade with a 10-foot pole. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So what should have been the response to this question? What do you make of Roman Catholic bishops saying it's a sin to vote for you, Senator Kerry? He said, I respect, but I disagree. What I would like to have heard is, why do you disagree? Why do you disagree with the bishops who say the position of our church is life, the position of this candidate, John Kerry, is pro-choice, therefore, to vote for him is to vote against the church's position on life? Why do you disagree with that? He went into his mantra about you can't legislate an article of faith. I would wonder, what other things, maybe a good follow-up might have been, what other things, Senator Kerry, do you consider to be articles of faith that you don't think, from your Roman Catholic upbringing, which he was quick to mention, from your Roman Catholic upbringing, what other things are articles of faith that you cannot impose legislatively on anyone else? Is there anything else besides the whole issue of when life begins or whether or not abortion is wrong? One thing I want you to listen for when we come back and hear this next cut, both of the candidates are going to be asked about their faith. Both of them are going to frame it in very, very personal terms. Both of them are going to talk about faith as almost an exclusively private thing. But both of them are also going to, ironically, their positions sound very, very similar. Both of them are also going to talk about how this intensely private and personal thing that they can't impose on anyone else informs their everyday policy decisions, determines who they are and how they vote and what policies they support. One thing I was just completely blown away by was when this question of what part does your faith play on your policy decisions was answered by both President George W. Bush and Senator Kerry. If you look at their answers side by side, they are almost identical. They are almost identical in their outline. My faith is important to me. It's personal. I really can't impose it on anyone else, and I never would think of doing it. To be an American is to let people worship however they see fit. And here's a list of the policies that I have put in place or voted for because of my values based upon my faith. I want you to listen for that. I'd like your reaction as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. In about 25 minutes, David Mills will join us. He's the editor of Touchstone Magazine and author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone titled Unimposing Kerry. We'll talk about American politics and the separation of church and state. Dr. Martin Noland will join us there in the middle of the second hour to continue this series that we're doing based upon our Issues, Etc. book of the month for October, the Renaissance and Reformation movements. We'll go back to the Reformation and talk about Martin Luther's evangelical emphasis. Then, in the last half hour of the program, from 5:30 to 6, Suzanne Venker will join us, and we're going to get her reaction to Sunday 60 Minutes feature on stay-at-home moms, wherein, if you were watching it, success, the word success was used several times, and it was applied to women's work outside the home, but not to women's work inside the home. We'll be right back with more Open Lines.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Would there have been a Reformation without a Renaissance, a flowering of knowledge, science, art, and exploration throughout Western civilization? How are these two movements, the Renaissance and the Reformation, related? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for October is actually two books, The Renaissance and Reformation Movements. The two-volume set is $40.99 or $23.99 per book. You can call to order The Renaissance and Reformation Movements from Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find the Issues, Etc. book of the month for October, The Renaissance and Reformation Movements. 1-800-325-3040. issuesetc.org.
Lead me, Lord, oh, follow, This Global Minute shares that boys and girls benefit when they understand they can have an active role in God's plans. Music, local outreach ideas, and stories about answered prayers are key ways that Worldwide Kids Club inspire children to tell others about Christ. The website worldwidekidsclub.com also offers ideas to direct boys and girls in how to serve in their own local neighborhoods. It could be feeding the hungry or service projects done in Christ's name. There are a variety of helpful articles for children and their parents. Pray for more boys and girls, whether they are in your immediate family, your church family, or the churches abroad, to get a deep conviction of God's calling on their lives. Pray they will commit to the Lord to serve in spiritually needy areas of the globe for His glory. See helpful tips on the website www.worldwidekidsclub.com. That's worldwidekidsclub.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Ken Caminiti and Christopher Reeve experienced spectacular peaks and sad valleys in their lives. Caminiti was at the summit as a baseball player, but struggled with addiction. Reeve, as Superman, surmounted human problems, but in real life was taken down by a spinal cord injury. Their valleys cry out for further advances in science. Did you ever tell your chemistry teacher that God was the reason your experiment turned out the way it did? Well, of course not. Our scientific view of the world teaches us to think in terms of natural cause and effect, and that's brought amazing and welcome advances. But when you are down in the sad valley of problems, of guilt, and finally of death, natural cause and effect is not a source of hope. The Bible's message that God breaks into the closed world of cause and effect is full of hope. Without denying the scientific method, the Bible teaches that God sent His Son into the world, that heaven hears your prayers, that baptism and communion are God at work, and I am with you is a close personal here and now reality. We all have our little peaks of success, but our valleys go deep. Psalm 121 says, I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord.
What is attention deficit disorder?
Impulsivity in speaking, in acting, the distractibility. I would be in the middle of a sentence and suddenly he was off doing something else.
In adults.
I felt guilty because I couldn't stay focused. I guess I wasn't spiritual enough or whatever.
Help on the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Open lines here in the first hour, getting your general reaction to what I thought were some of the most significant questions asked last night in the presidential debate. Is homosexuality a choice? President Bush said, I don't know. Kerry said, it's not a choice. The reaction to the Roman Catholic bishops as they have made pronouncements about voting for pro-choice lawmakers. Kerry says, look, I can't legislate an article of faith like When Life Begins. And Bush was a more general answer on a culture of life, promoting a culture of life. We got a couple more ahead, but I want to take some phone calls here coming out of this break. First, we'll talk with Lael. Lael, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Pastor Todd. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Thanks for talking about this. It's an excellent opportunity to really mesh through all this garbage. I can't understand how someone differentiates between Catholic faith and biblical truth. If he's Catholic, he's Christian, what about the biblical truth of life that God gives us? I don't know, that's just a bit foggy to me. And also, I'd like to hear a politician say, I'd like to defend the most helpless of all American citizens, the unborn child. That's what I'd like to hear somebody say, to stand up and say, I want to defend these voiceless, these people who are not protected.
What did you make of the president's response when to the second cut that we heard there, where he basically said America is a place where life ought to be, what does he say? It's kind of his, he's been doing this for 4 years. Every person ought to be welcomed in life and protected in law or something like that, which is his way of talking about protecting the unborn. Is that sufficient for you?
I think he needs to be a little more defined. and that life is at conception. So many people want to just say that's a tissue, you know, and that is what, and I think what he said is fine, but I think it's good to be a little more defined and say, you know, God gives, or, you know, conception is life, that's a human at the very beginning.
Lael, thank you very much for your call. Don is up next. Don, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Pastor Todd, how are you today?
Very well.
I just wanted to comment on the statements by John Kerry that he can't impose an article of faith or legislate based on an article of faith. It would seem to me he is legislating based on an article of faith, which is a faith in secular humanism, which would place choice above an absolute right or wrong. And so it just seems like for him to say, I can't impose articles of faith on people, he's doing it. It's just not religious faith. It's faith in secular humanism.
Well, strictly speaking, Kerry did not put choice above right and wrong. If you listen carefully, now I think you're going to hear this in the last cut that we play on Would You Overturn Roe v. Wade? You're going to hear him say, choice is between a woman, her God, and her doctor. So God's in the mix there as kind of the absolute moral lawgiver. But still, this is kind of a, I guess, something you work out between God, you, and your doctor.
No, I mean, he did throw God in. It didn't seem like a very serious use of God in that mix. It's all really personal to you, and if you decide God thinks it's okay, well, then that's fine. It just seems to me he's trying to claim faith and then, you know, uses the reference to faith without works, but then, you know, his work seems to be against faith. He's not legislating in a way which is consistent with his faith. He's claiming it, yet he's acting in a way that's contrary to it.
Thank you very much, Don. I think it's a good point, and that I think is something that is evident from what Senator Kerry has been saying, and that is, look, I know where my church stands. I know where I stand. He's even said that life begins at conception, and he thinks that abortion is wrong. But he says, I can't legislate that way. So he is, in effect, admitting that he's acting against his own conscience when he votes pro-choice. Now, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that those are really his beliefs. He is admitting that he's acting against his conscience, against his church's teachings, and against his faith when he votes pro-choice, and one might say by extension, when he takes money from pro-choice groups like NARAL or Planned Parenthood. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Paul is calling from his car. Paul, welcome.
Hi, Pastor. I wanted to comment on the question about the issue of homosexuality. I was a bit curious by the point of that question and what Schieffer was trying to get at in the first place, because no matter what your answer is to it, I'm not really sure what's driving behind that or what the interest is in that, because I think the president's answer was a good one, and frankly, I think the senator's answer was really bad, because he said two things. He said that homosexuals are born that way, whatever exactly that meant, I don't know. And he also said that God made them that way.
Yeah.
But I think you always have to be prepared to question a person's epistemology. In other words, just ask them point blank, how do you know that? And even more so, even if, you know, we find a gene that we could be said it makes the homosexual or gives them the propensity to be inclined to have a sexual desire towards another man, it seems to be a non sequitur in what's implied in that question. That is that it needs to be justified because of that, because you can't simply argue from desire to justification or from some innate desire to morality. Because, I mean, obviously, if you put this in a different context, the absurdity of that becomes clear, because if scientists in the future again find a gene for the alcoholic or the pedophile, I mean, is the senator going to then say, when the alcoholic kills a person in a car accident because he's intoxicated, or the pedophile molests a child, that they were simply doing what God made them to do, or that they were simply just giving into the desire that they had no control over?
Well, Paul, you're right, and it sounds like you have a pretty firm grasp of the whole logic of the situation. Now, I did say earlier that I thought Schieffer's question, is homosexuality a choice, was a brilliant question, and I stand by that, because, see, this is the whole point. If it is a choice, if it is purely a behavioral choice, then one can take a position against it on a matter of principle. But if it's not a choice, then it becomes something akin to, say, innate. It's become something innate, an immutable characteristic. And then someone mounts the argument, look, we do not discriminate against immutable characteristics like skin color or something else like that. Now, you're very right, Paul. there may well be immutable characteristics that we're born with. Like, say, maybe a propensity toward alcohol. Who knows? Let's just say, for the sake of argument, doesn't mean that to overindulge in alcohol is right. Just because you're born with a propensity to indulge, overindulge in alcohol, doesn't mean it's right for you to do it. You're right. You cannot argue from an is to an ought. It's a very good point. Thank you very much, Paul. All right, let's get one more phone call in here before we go back to some of this audio, because these other two questions are also very, very important here during open lines. Let's take line two there, Gary. It's Ron calling. Ron, welcome.
Welcome. I have a comment about Bush's comment and the fact that he's not a good steward of our government's funds. I guess Kerry actually made the comment that whenever he took office, he had a $5.6 trillion budget surplus, and now he's got a $2.5 trillion budget deficit. That's over $8 trillion that he's expended without having revenue to cover it, and now he wants to cut taxes, which is going to further reduce revenue. And, you know, Jesus talks about being a good steward, and as far as I'm concerned, the president should be a good steward of our country's money.
Well, okay, I understand exactly your concern, Ron, and thank you for the call. Two things. First of all, the president would probably respond that cutting taxes does not reduce revenue, but in fact increases revenue. Because people work harder and don't have the disincentive of having their money taxed, and so they do. We end up getting more revenue. Now, that would be his argument. I think that he has a track record for making that argument. Now, here's the question about good stewardship of our funds. The whole government is involved here, by the way. Not only the president, but also the legislature. Really, the purse strings of our government are held by the House of Representatives. It all has to pass through, of course, the Senate and then the chief executive. So if we're going to lay the blame for poor stewardship at the doorstep of the president, we also need to lay it at the doorstep of the people who hold the purse strings and who pass appropriations bills. Now, the president does sign them, and I'm not going to try and defend the president's overspending. I'm not going to try and defend that. But you raise a legitimate question. Is this good stewardship of our tax money? Let's go back to the debate itself. Here was a question from Bob Sheeper. What part does your faith play in your policy decisions? This was the question I said had to be asked, especially given the context that we're talking about. Now, faith has come to the top of the barrel. It's come to the front burner. Here's Bob Sheeper.
Mr. President, let's go to a new question. You were asked before the invasion or after the invasion of Iraq, if you checked with your dad, and I believe, I don't remember the quote exactly, but I believe you said you had checked with a higher authority. I would like to ask you, what part does your faith play on your policy decisions?
First, my faith plays a big part in my life, and that's when I was answering that question, what I was really saying to the person was that I pray a lot. And I do. And my faith is it's very personal. I pray for strength. I pray for wisdom. I pray for our troops in harm's way. I pray for my family. I pray for my little girls. But I'm mindful in a free society that people can worship if they want to or not. You're equally an American if you choose to worship an Almighty and if you choose not to. If you're a Christian, you're a Muslim, you're equally an American. That's the great thing about America, is the right to worship the way you see fit. Prayer in religion sustained me. I received calmness in the storms of the presidency. I love the fact that people pray for me and my family all around the country. Somebody asked me one time, well, how do you know? I said, I just feel it. Religion is an important part. I never want to impose my religion on anybody else. But when I make decisions, I stand on principle. And the principles are derived from who I am. I believe we ought to love our neighbor like we love ourselves. It's manifested in public policy through the faith-based initiative where we've unleashed the armies of compassion to help heal people who hurt. I believe that God wants everybody to be free. That's what I believe. And that's one of the part of my foreign policy. In Afghanistan, I believe that the freedom there is a gift from the Almighty. And I can't tell you how encouraged I am to see freedom on the march. And so my principles that I make decisions on are a part of me, and religion is a part of me.
Senator Kerry?
Well, I respect everything that the president has said, and certainly respect his faith. I think it's important, and I share it. I think that he just said that freedom is a gift from the Almighty. Everything is a gift from the Almighty. And as I measure the words of the Bible, and we all do, different people measure different things. The Quran, the Torah, or, you know, Native Americans who gave me a blessing the other day had their own special sense of connectedness to a higher being. And people all find their ways to express it. I was taught, I went to a church school, and I was taught that the two greatest commandments are love the Lord your God with all your mind, your body, and your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And frankly, I think we have a lot more loving of our neighbor to do in this country and on this planet. We have a separate and unequal school system in the United States of America. There's one for the people who have, and there's one for the people who don't have. And we're struggling with that today. The president and I have a difference of opinion about how we live out our sense of our faith. I talked about it earlier when I talked about the works and faith without works being dead. I think we've got a lot more work to do. And as president, I will always respect everybody's right to practice religion as they choose or not to practice, because that's part of America.
Now, if you've been paying attention to what Senator Kerry has been saying lately on the issue of faith, that is pretty much his standard response. There's nothing in there that really surprised me at all, although I was interested to note that he got a blessing from a Native American group, some sort of a religious blessing, and the way he framed the situation, they had a sense of connectedness to a higher being. I don't know how more generic you could possibly be. It almost sounded like an AA meeting, a sense of connectedness to a higher being. But in response, both of these men's questions were very, very similar. What Bush put his emphasis on was the fact that he prayed a lot. And Kerry talked about how we've got more loving of our neighbor to do. But both of them essentially affirmed that their faith is personal, one might even say private, but that their faith does, and they wouldn't impose, both of them said they would not impose their faith on anyone else. And everyone has a right to worship however they want to in America. That's what makes America great. And yet both of them affirmed that they have, you know, I was ready to be critical of Kerry on this, to be quite honest, because I've heard his spiel before. But when I heard the president give his response, I thought that's not that different from what John Kerry has been saying. My faith is personal. I wouldn't impose it on anyone else. Everyone can worship the way they want to. And the way that I, the policies that I choose and the things that I promote are based upon me and my faith. And that's exactly what Senator Kerry was saying. I expected a bigger difference here and was kind of surprised not to get one. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. There was a little bit of a pluralistic tone in Senator Kerry's response, where he talks about everyone has a different way of expressing. Now, he didn't come out and say everyone has a different way of expressing our common belief in a God, which would have been a statement of religious pluralism. All roads lead to God. We just have different ways of expressing it, different avenues of getting to the same God. He did not say that, but he did talk about everyone having a different way of expressing the sense of the Almighty. When given an opportunity, both of these men, when given an opportunity to talk about their faith, were you disappointed that they were so completely generic? I know it's a presidential debate. I know that both men are not trying to do as little as they can to offend people as they can. But were you disappointed when both of these men were given the opportunity to talk about your faith They both couched it in terms of the Almighty, of religious beliefs, of faith, of a sense of connectedness to the higher being. And both of these men are Christians, by the way. At least both of them claim to be Christians. Matt is calling. Matt, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yeah, I was going to say that John Kerry says he doesn't want to, quote, impose his religion when it comes to abortion and stem cell research, although he believes it's a human being. He thinks it's okay for society to do away with those human beings when they see fit. But he seems to want to impose his faith when it comes to taxes and health care, because he uses the Bible when he talks about faith and works. And basically, I've seen other times when he says that where he accuses the current, his opponent, the president, of not fulfilling his faith by having a certain amount of whatever program it is. But he seems to be able to impose his faith in those matters. Only when it comes to abortion and stem cell research does he not want to impose his beliefs on anybody else.
Very interesting, Matt. Thank you for the call. That's why I asked earlier, when the president says I can't impose an article of faith when it comes to when does life begin, I asked, well, what other things are articles of faith that you do not feel you can impose legislatively on the rest of Americans? What other things besides that? In fact, you'll be interested, Matt. Stay tuned for, in about 15 minutes, we're going to be taking up a conversation with David Mills, editor of Touchstone Magazine, on that very issue, American politics, the separation of church and state, and what should inform our legislators' decisions when they claim to be people of faith. Do they have to keep their faith separate from the policy decisions that they make? Let's talk with Doug. I'm sorry. Yeah, Doug is calling from his car. Doug, welcome.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well.
Great. I listened to the debate last night. I watched it on television, and I really was very impressed with the response President Bush gave with regard to the role his faith plays in his decision-making. And I suppose if you looked at the comments both Senator Kerry and President Bush made, if you were to look at them on paper, they would look very similar. But I guess my impression was I felt like President Bush spoke more from the heart, seemed to be more sincere and genuine. And it seemed that Senator Kerry really kind of was struggling to kind of, you know, put some things together. It was a little bit more of a, maybe more of a canned response.
Now, what in particular about the president's response gave you the sense that he was speaking, as you said, from the heart or more sincerely? What in particular did he say? Or is it just a general impression you got?
Well, I think it was just a general impression. As I said, if you put the words on paper, if you were just to read them, I suppose, you know, without the emotion and that sort of thing, I suppose they would appear to be very similar. But it just seemed that in watching President Bush, it just felt there was a connection with me as a Christian. It just felt like he was extremely genuine. And well, I suppose, too, you know, in talking about this whole issue of people imposing their beliefs on other people, you know, how would a person in a position of leadership anywhere, whether it's politics or in business, not be accused of that, I suppose, if that's their character, that's what makes them who they are.
Doug, stay tuned for that David Mills conversation coming up in about 10 minutes here on Issues, Etc. You'll find it very, very interesting. It'll deal with some of those questions. I was particularly trying to guard against, see, I have an affinity for Bush. I think he's a genuine guy. I'll be honest with you. I think he's a genuine guy. We're fellow Texans. People who are not from Texas don't get it, but, you know, there's something appealing about his whole demeanor to a guy like me, and that would probably a hard thing to understand, I guess. I have affinity for him politically. So I was trying to guard against this thing where, boy, he seems more sincere to me. I was trying to take the whole sincerity issue completely away and guard against it. And what I discovered was the two responses from both President Bush and from Senator Kerry on this issue of the role of faith were almost identical to one another, except that Bush talked about the fact that he prayed. He referenced his personal piety. But other than that, they said basically the same thing. And I have no reason, I have no objective reason to doubt the sincerity, the personal sincerity of Senator Kerry. I can question whether or not, I can question the fruit, how he votes, those objective things. But I don't know whether it's heartfelt or not. I don't know whether it's heartfelt or not with George W. Bush. There's no way for me to know. Jerry's on the line. Jerry, welcome to Issues, et cetera.
Yeah, hi, Todd. You know, the politicians, they can't really impose their beliefs, and we don't want them to, in my opinion, because I wouldn't want a non-believer telling me I have to believe in some oligarch or something. Now, Jesus, to back this up, Jesus never really forced his teachings on the people. He gave it to them, whether they accepted or not. It was never forced. And also people that don't even want Jesus in their life, or they don't want to the guidance of the Holy Spirit, just in a mental way is what the way my guidance by the Holy Spirit is. And they don't, God does not force that on them. If you want it, if you call out, Lord, please, you know, give me Jesus and also help me, Holy Spirit, to guide my life, God will, I believe, give that to you.
Jerry, thank you for the call. Well, okay. I don't know that there's necessarily a connection between whether or not God forces anyone to believe. He does not coerce faith. He creates faith. There's a difference between creating faith and coercing faith. But I don't know if there's a connection there to be made with whether or not politicians should impose their beliefs. Jerry, you ought to be listening next in the next 10 minutes about how politicians really do impose their beliefs, whether or not they intend to, every time they vote. Very quickly here, let's get this last cut in on Roe v. Wade.
Mr. President, I want to go back to something Senator Kerry said earlier tonight and ask a follow-up of my own. He said, and this will be a new question to you, he said that you had never said whether you would like to overturn Roe v. Wade. So I'd ask you directly.
What he's asking me is, will I have a litmus test for my judges? And the answer is, no, I will not have a litmus test. I will pick judges who will interpret the Constitution, but I'll have no litmus test.
Senator Kerry, you'd like
is that
to
a new question?
That's a new question for Senator for President.
Which Bush. Time limit are we?
You in? Have 90 seconds.
Thank you very much. Well, again, the president didn't answer the question. I'll answer it straight to America. I'm not going to appoint a judge to the court who's going to undo a constitutional right, whether it's the First Amendment or the Fifth Amendment or some other right that's given under our courts today or under the Constitution. And I believe that the right of choice is a constitutional right. So I don't intend to see it undone. Clearly, the president wants to leave an ambivalence or intends to undo it.
I would like to have seen George W. Bush say, I think Roe is bad law, and I think a right reading of the Constitution would undo Roe because Roe is not good constitutional thinking. I would like to have heard him say that. He was not as forthright as I think he should have been on this issue. I want him to have a litmus test. He ought to have a litmus test. His litmus test ought to be, as he said, judges that will read the Constitution as it was intended to be read. But also, let's be honest, I think this probably is in the back of his mind, I would like some pro-life Supreme Court justices. I don't think that's too much to ask for, to have a pro-life Supreme Court justice. We've got a couple up there. Just once, I'd like to hear someone say, because I think it would have stood in very good contrast to Kerry's statement that Roe is a constitutional right, that the right to abortion is a constitutional right. I think it would be good to question that. I don't know if a fair reading of the Constitution would give you something like Roe. Even the justices who passed Roe 30 years ago very famously said, look, what we're doing here, we're not doing based strictly on the Constitution, but upon the penumbra and the shadows of things that we can detect in the Constitution. They at least were honest about the fact that they didn't think they had a real firm constitutional footing for their decision to decriminalize abortion 30 years ago. They didn't even think it was, strictly speaking, a constitutional right. They never even said that. What they said was, look, we think we can derive a right from the Constitution. We think we can detect the shadow of a right from a Constitution. That's all the farther they were willing to go. And it would have been nice to hear the president say that. Even the Supreme Court justices who made the decision didn't think that they were on firm constitutional grounds. And if a right reading of the Constitution would undo Roe, then so be it. Then so be it. This whole idea, I'm not going to have a litmus test, and it's a code he's sending to pro-lifers like me who say, I know what he's talking about. Yeah, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about undoing Roe v. Wade, but he's not going to say he would undo Roe v. Wade. Well, let's just say it. Let's just say it. I would like to see bad law, that bad law, overturned. When we come back, David Mills. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172.